This podcast is a product of the Hyper RPG Podcasting Network. Visit hyperrabbitpowergo.com to learn more.
Welcome to another episode of Hyper Otaku Presents Anime Club here on Hyper RPG. Welcome back, first of all, to Michelle.
Yeah.
Michelle was just on a fabulous vacation to Hawaii. She also celebrated her birthday.
Yay.
So happy birthday, Michelle.
Hawaiian birthday.
It was. It one step closer to death on a tropical island.
I mean, if you're going to get one step closer to death, I feel like spending it on a tropical island is it's preferable.
It was very nice. Yeah. It was very relaxing. I'm glad I got to go. And now that I'm back, it's very busy because it's summer season.
Yes, so it is.
It's summer LA.
Then there's lots of conventions and all kinds of stuff that just happens in the summer.
It's
so
upon us. Con season is here, guys.
It's going to be so fun.
Yeah, it is going to be fun.
You guys
are like so late.
I know, but it's like it's a little overwhelming. I'm trying. Again, it's one of those like grass is always greener situations of people from the outside look and they think, oh, it's so great. You get to go to all these conventions and these cool places and interact with these people. But it's really, really tiring.
It is really tiring.
Awesome.
Really tiring.
It's like going to really optimistic. So by the time you're done, you're just like, you have no soul left.
You are a little dead inside.
All your HP MMP has been depleted.
and it's like work for us, you know? So
it's fun work.
Yeah. It is. It's very, very fun work, but it is still work. And no matter what, sometimes you don't feel like going to work. Sometimes you're just at a convention and you're like, man, my hotel has a really sweet pool. I'd like to just chill here all day, but that is not an option.
But it's upon us, and welcome back, dude.
Yeah, and Matt, great to see you as always.
Yeah, it's always good to see you guys too, man. Yeah. This is like, I love doing this.
Here we are. We are going to be continuing our discussion of Cowboy Bebop today. Hey. We will be wrapping it up, covering sessions 18 through 26, or episodes 18 through 26. Cowboy Bebop calls them sessions because it's fancy.
It's
and
super
the whole
cool.
Because they're
it's
cool.
Hip.
Music theme that goes on throughout it. But, you know, before we get into that, I do want to once again say thank you to all of the patrons on our Patreon. It is thanks to your contributions that we are able to continue to grow our YouTube content here at Hyper RPG and bring you more fun stuff like this. Thanks to your donations. You know, we now have a live Hyper Hero show on YouTube every single Thursday night at around 9:30, and we've hit our Comic-Con goals. So keep up the great work.
Next goal is that we're doing a new show. Our next goal.
Oh, a new show.
Yeah, a new show. We're going to be producing that. So
let's hit it. Well, keep that going, guys, so that we can see what it is that Matt's got cooking.
We honestly don't know.
I honestly don't know. I might know, but... I don't have confirmation. yes, before we get into the Cowboy Bebop discussion. Now, Michelle, tell us a little about this adventure that you had in Hawaii.
Oh.
Because there was a very important thing that occurred.
There was an anime component of it. And that component was that in this one episode of Koizumi Loves Ramen, where she goes on a vacance, she goes on a tropical vacation. You see her in a big sun hat coming out of McDonald's because she speaks English, which is very fancy because she's ordering... it's called noodles from McDonald's. The McDonald's in Hawaii are the only location that carry it's a traditional kind of noodle. It's a wheat noodle in a light broth. It comes with two pieces of pork and a piece of the Naruto fish cake. It's a very light noodle, but it's very cute. It comes in its own cup that has a little picture of a, I don't know what the word is for the traditional Polynesian boat is, but it's on there and it's the arches, and it's very cute, and it was good, and it was like, I think, $3.
Nice.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And anime experience, though, priceless.
Yes. Yeah. I just like Koizumi. That was very good. But it was great. And there's a lot of stuff on the McDonald's Hawaiian menu. Like, they have taro pies.
I know. It was so funny. I saw somebody commented, I think, on your post about the taro pie. And they said, I like the idea of taro pie, but not for McDonald's. And my reaction was, have you never had a pie at McDonald's?
Yeah.
They're freaking delicious.
They really are, dude.
Amazing. Although, stay away from that weird birthday cake one they tried one time.
That
was really gross.
Nope, that was a hard pass for me. Because that, to me, just smelled of this is going to be so disgustingly sweet. It is going to instantly rot at least 7 of my teeth. So I steered clear of that one. But man, I love a good McDonald's apple pie,
me
guys.
Too, man.
Yeah. Tara pie, ramen, or it's called Seimin ramen, and lots of other weird stuff they have there. Very good.
Yeah.
Anime related.
I have to say, I do not believe that in any of my more recent trips or any of my trips at all to Hawaii, I don't think I've gone to McDonald's.
You wouldn't think to go unless you knew they had special stuff.
Exactly.
Because McDonald's in Japan is the same way.
You should know that they have special stuff because the McDonald's in Japan is the same way. The McDonald's in France or Europe, Germany, anywhere else that is not America, they have different stuff. Mm-hmm, and you're like, I want to have these traditional cultural experiences and try new things. And you don't think, oh, I'm going to go to McDonald's and be able to try something new. But you always can. So...
I'm loving it.
When you're traveling, think about it.
Consider McDonald's. Yeah. This stream is not brought to you by
it's
McDonald's.
Not brought to
I sure
not.
Wish it was, though, because they'd hopefully be paying us a lot of money. Speaking of experiences and whatnot, I don't know. Have you guys watched the Netflix series Agretzko yet?
Yes!
I haven't seen that yet.
Oh my God. Okay, here's the thing. It's a documentary, you guys. If you have ever worked, it is a documentary.
Okay,
it is a narrowly disguised documentary where they have replaced human beings with adorable animals because otherwise it is too real.
Okay.
If you have ever worked a job that was sort of your survival job that you didn't necessarily like and you weren't passionate about, regardless of whether or not it's in an office, oh my God, it just hits the nail on the head. So hard. All of her coworkers are people that I have known in real life in my many faceted career. And oh boy, Agretzko. So, so good. And also, if you're in Los Angeles, by the time this video airs, it'll be a few more days. I think it closes on Friday of this week, next week for us right now, but this week for you guys watching the video, which goes up on usually Monday or Tuesday. They're doing this pop-up basically in the Sanrio store in the Japanese Village in downtown LA in Little Tokyo that is Agretzko's Den of Rage. And it's so adorable. They have all
super
kinds
metal.
Of exclusive merchandise. They have a setup that's supposed to be sort of like her cubicle. And then they also have a setup that's supposed to be the karaoke lounge that she goes to where she gets out all of her rage by singing death metal. It's so fun. It's really, really cute. There's lots of merch there. And they have big cardboard cutouts of all the characters.
It looked like
the show.
A lot of fun.
It was really cool.
I'm glad they had Washimi.
Through.
She's my favorite.
I think my favorite is I love Feneco because I just love Fennec boxes anyway. And again, like that is a girl that I have known. The girl that's just like, I don't care about any of this. Whatever.
Yeah. So I love her voice actress too. It's very good.
Yeah, it's very, very good.
So you can watch it on Netflix. It's put out by Sanrio.
Yes.
It's a company, the same company that brought us Hello Kitty, Pom Pom Purin.
Yeah. And that was the thing about Agretzko. Like when this good character was introduced long, long before.
I feel like they did the big launch of it maybe a year and a half ago.
I was going to say at least a year before this series came out, I already loved the concept of the character of this just 25-year-old working girl who's working this dead-end job and just has to get out her rage by singing death metal. It's really, really cute. I think it's interesting that
Sanrio has started to do characters that are like, so they have Gudetama, who is, it's not Hello Kitty, basically. Like, this is, Gudetama is like a gross, lazy egg.
Yeah.
Hates doing shit. And then Agretzko looks really cute, but has this like deeper, very adult story to her about why it's hard to work in a job with difficult coworkers.
Yeah.
What does that mean for her life?
And like the whole thing where she takes yoga classes.
To try to relax.
Again, truly, you guys, this is a documentary.
Yeah.
you need to watch this.
Self-help is like really important too. So if you can learn anything from the show, to take care of yourself because you're worth it.
It's true. You do. I cried watching this stupid show. Like I thought it was going to be like Hello Kitty's fun mysteries with her friends. But
No.
I like cried because I was like, this, I've been there. Yeah. I have been in this.
And
this
the episodes are only
work.
15 minutes. It's a super fast watch, but it flies by. It's so good.
So good.
All right. Well, moving on to our next piece of news. Recently, it was announced that Netflix, again, we were just talking about a Netflix series, has ordered a new original anime series from Viz Media and Powerhouse Animation, the production company behind Castlevania, Once again, an original Netflix animation. The series, entitled Seis Manos, is set in the 1970s in Mexico and tells the story of three orphaned martial artists who join forces with a DEA agent and a Mexican federal in pursuit of justice after their mentor is murdered. Seis Manos is a co-creation of powerhouse CEO Brad Graber and writer Alvaro Rodriguez, whose previous works include Machete and From Dusk Till Dawn, the TV series, not the Quentin Tarantino film, though it's inspired by it. Mm-hmm. Which brings up the question, Matt, if the content is not from a Japanese creator, do we still call it anime?
That's such a controversial question. Yes. That people have different answers to.
I totally agree.
And I think it is, because anime is just animation.
Sure.
You know, personally, like, I don't know, like... that is such a tough question. If you go to like things like Korra and stuff like that,
right? No, people are pretty adamant that that's not anime. Mm-hmm. And it's a Korean animation studio working on that. Powerhouse, I believe, is mostly in the U.S. I think it's another one of those sort of like joint operations. My feeling about this is, I think the reason that they're slapping it with the label of anime is because of Viz Media's involvement. Since they are such a big distributor of anime within the U.S., and they are owned by a Japanese company. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So
that makes
I think that's where you kind of get into a gray area.
Yeah. By definition, like, probably, I don't know, check Merriam-Webster, it probably says, like, anime, with the E, the accent on D on the E, mm-hmm. is from Japan. Mm-hmm. But I used to work in a manga, an American manga licensing firm that I will not name. But they had a very nice outlook on it, which is like at this point, and this was like in 2000.
Right.
2005. No, sorry. This is like in 2008. And in that time, they were like, look, people at this point are old enough to have grown up reading manga, seeing anime when they were kids, and now they're making this content. I think this is still manga. Even if it's by a, you know, Caucasian person or somebody who did not grow up in Japan.
Sure.
I think it's still manga because there are certain things
that's fair
that you bring. There are certain stylistic choices.
Yes, exactly.
That are brought in that are manga sort of manga specific. There is crossover nowadays, of course, but in anime is the same thing. There's some crossover aspects, like, I don't know, like the old stuff, like speed lines, sweat drops, and you don't even necessarily have to have that stuff anymore. I think anime is more about stylistic animation that's sort of targeted towards adults.
I totally agree. That's a good way of putting
and
that.
And the thing that's really fascinating to me is that, and even still, if you research it now, Castlevania, when it was being released on Netflix, was not being pushed as being anime. Mm-hmm. It was an animated series that was for adults.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I do think that you're right that there is sort of this underlying thing of, okay, if you're calling it anime, then that means that there is more likely to be an adult kind of storyline rather than being something that is necessarily even family friendly, let alone for kids.
Exactly,
even when you look at things like Avatar and Korra, like those are also catered to adults too, like they, I think,
sure, but they're family friendly, like they are for kids, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
they're
for
that sort of 12-year-old demographic. However, they don't treat 12-year-olds like they're morons, and so there is a lot of appeal for adults and older teenagers.
I would say it could go either way on the subject, because I think another benchmarker usually is that if it was animated for the Japanese language or an Asian language, then
that's also what I've heard.
Yeah,
too.
But it's very complicated. It's not clear cut.
There's not an easy answer,
and you definitely can't say like, oh, it has to be from an Asian studio, because guess what, guys? Nickelodeon only does like the keyframes and they send everything to Asia. They've been doing that for years and years.
You look back as early as those like The Hobbit and The Return of the King Last Unicorn, like a lot of those, at least I know Hobbit and Return of the King for sure, were worked on by Studio Topcraft, which became Studio Ghibli. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of crossover. And even Japan outsources their animation to other countries as
Korea,
well.
Korea, Vietnam.
Yeah. But, you know, and guess what, this new anime that's coming out, Seis Manos, which is six hands in Spanish, which is three people.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
It sounds like it's going to be very stylized. So
absolutely.
Sounds really dark.
I mean, like you hear the synopsis, and it already sounds like something I would see out of like you know, Japanese culture and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
So to me, I would consider it anime.
Yeah. I don't think there's a clear cut answer either way, but I think it's an interesting discussion.
I think it's like, is it good? Then we're allowed to put it in the canon. If it's bad, just call it American Adventure.
And obviously there is a big audience for anime amongst Spanish speaking countries. I mean, the Spanish dub of Dragon Ball Z is legendary.
Yes, it is. It really, really is. I grew up watching that kind of stuff. Like, it's huge, so it makes sense that they have things targeted for that kind of demographic. Like, you know, I think that's super, super great.
I agree. I think whether we classify it as anime or not, it's a really smart move because, again, there is definitely a demographic there for this. So...
Seis manos.
I thought it was three at first because I'm stupid. And I was like, is this like the Three Ninjas Kickback, but in Mexico?
Nah, I think it's going to be like Mexican drug cartel that's going to get real dark.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Well, moving on to our next piece of news here. Makoto Shinkai, of course, best known as the director of the critically acclaimed Your Name, Japan's highest grossing anime film to date, was hired by the Singapore transit company Taisei Corporation to create an ad for the new Thompson East coastline. And it's freaking beautiful, guys. It depicts Singapore in gorgeous animated glory through the eyes of a lady engineer named Ayano as she works on the construction of the new transit line. Michelle, I just feel like this needs to be a full-length film. What about you?
So it's funny that we are used to seeing only very good animation when it comes to movies.
Sure.
Academy Award winning properties, but there's a lot of commercials.
It's true. It's becoming more and more common in Japan too, I feel like.
This isn't the first commercial that I did for this company.
Yes.
If you Google it real quick, there's maybe like seven short ones he did that are all about the same kind of theme. You see a busy working person who's like, I can't hang out because I have to go to my work.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And then their friends are like, oh, that sucks. We're having fun. But then the person is all like, wakes up early and puts on their hard helmet, goes to work, and is making the country a different place to live in, you know? But it's done in this very kind of altruistic, optimistic
It really does look like it is an ad for just a slice of life anime. Right?
It really
about
does.
Construction. About a girl making self-discoveries through construction.
And it makes sense that, like, you know, the first off, it's just so beautiful and the quality is really great. It makes sense that they would drop so much money on these because the commercial industry, they drop bank on these commercials. All commercials you watch. Mm-hmm. So like, why not put it towards something that's physically like appealing and is high quality and like it makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah.
And also it's like the medium of animation, as we've talked about before, is a method of storytelling, but also the medium animation specifically is used to enhance certain things about, you know, that you wouldn't capture on a camera.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're drawn with big eyes, your expressions are more easily readable. Mm-hmm. In this case, it shows the beauty of like families having fun together, enjoying the new train line that you just made.
Or yes, exactly.
People working hard together on a construction site, a place that's usually kind of, I guess, ugly and gray.
Yeah.
Being shown as being like cool and like, oh, look at all this collaboration. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like pinks and blues.
Oh, they're having a nice time having lunch together.
Yeah. I watched the shit out of an anime by Makoto Shinkai about constructing a train.
Yep.
Line.
I would watch it.
All over that
shit. I would 10/10 watch this for sure in a movie theater on a streaming service. However I could get it, I am in. And speaking of streaming services, guys, do not forget that we currently have a promotion going on with Funimation for their streaming service, Funimation Now. If you go to funimation.com/subscribe, if you are a new time Funimation subscriber, you can enter the promo code Hyper MHA at checkout. Remember that the caps are important. So it's a capital H, all lowercase, and the rest of Hyper, and then MHA for My Hero Academia, all caps, to get $5 off your first month subscription. And that is after a 2-week free trial. So.
Yeah, and there's only 500 codes available?
Yes, exactly. This is a limited time offer. It's only available to the first 500 people to use it. So get on that, you guys.
Yeah.
Because that is one of the ways that you can watch Cowboy Bebop if for whatever reason you haven't seen it. And also, that's where you can watch the next series we'll be covering, which we will talk about a little bit later in the episode.
So excited.
But here we go. Cowboy Bebop.
Let's do it.
Were there any episodes here that you, because for me, a lot of the experience that I've had having not watched Cowboy Bebop in a while is I was surprised the episodes that I remembered. It was like I would see the title card and start watching the episode and something in the back of my brain would just trigger and unlock and come to the forefront.
Uh-huh.
So of these episodes, were there any that stood out to you as being that for you guys?
Mine was definitely the one, Pierrot Lefeu. That one is so good. And yes. I remember it watching it as a kid because it looks, and I did some research on it, and like it reminded me of like Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, yeah.
Which makes sense.
Totally.
Because it's totally stylized after Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this villain is basically like a Joker mixed with like the Penguin and flies around like Totoro, you know?
Yeah, you're right, though.
Yeah.
That animation felt a little different than episode, didn't it?
It did. It looked different.
When I was looking at it, I was like, what is this, a different studio? I think it was like
an homage to, but The Killing Joke. Because like that whole thing takes place at the theme park.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Like, ooh, that episode was just creepy. Like The Killing Joke to me. There were a couple really creepy episodes. There were in this last stretch. Chunk.
Yeah.
What about you, Michelle?
Yeah. Cowboy Funk.
Oh my
God.
As soon as it started, I was like, wait, I kind of remember there was a cowboy, like a real cowboy who like rode on a horse on a spaceship. And I was like, oh shit, this happened. Yeah. It wasn't just a dream.
Andy.
And then on the second watch, I realized like it's supposed to be, I mean, they kind of say it like directly in the show, but he's supposed to be Spike.
Yes.
But like
yes.
a shitty version of it. Like just everything pumped to a 10. It's very cute. Yeah. It's definitely a filler episode.
Oh, yeah.
This fucking dude on his horse and spaceships was like so ridiculous. Well,
and I love too in that episode the fact that Spike comes back and is trying to tell them all about Andy, and their reaction is, that's not really believable. You should have made him a samurai. And like at the end, he comes back and he's a samurai now.
Oh my God, when he comes to reveal, because I forgot about that part until it happened.
Yeah.
And it had all these like crazy memories. It's just like, God, this would have. What a fun, stupid, nonsense episode to put in.
I love that episode before it got so
really right. Yeah. Really rough. Yeah, right before you really dig into the
Oh boy. How about you, Emma?
For me, the one that I remember, I was sort of multitasking. I was hanging up curtains in my house, and when I started watching these, and so the first of them is Speak Like a Child, which starts off, and it's this whole silly thing about horse races and Betamax tapes, and then I remembered what happened at the end of the episode before it did, and I just kind of stopped what I was doing and started tearing up.
Yes. It's a true tragedy, man. She's like, she can't remember anything from that video.
No,
like who was she? And we get some of those answers like
in Hard Luck Woman, which is the third to last episode before they start the last arc. And that's another episode where, as soon as it started, I was like, oh, shit, I remember now.
Yeah.
Because after you get your memories back, it's just like, what's the point of anything? Oh, God damn it.
I like too.
She's a great character.
She's such a good character. And then that comes back around in Real Folk Blues Part 2 when she confronts Spike and says, I remembered my past. It was pointless. It didn't bring me any joy. So why are you so obsessed with going after yours? It's so good. It's really good. I also Boogie Woogie Feng Shui really stood out to me as one that I remembered well, with the daughter of Jet's friend and how they used Feng Shui to reconnect them,
and they had that final moment and the opening the rift.
It's interesting to me that Jet in a lot of ways is the character who manages to reconcile and live with his past.
Yeah.
As opposed to Faye, who, when she reconciles her past, goes, well, everyone I knew and loved and everything I cared about is gone, so I guess I'll just move on.
Yeah.
And Spike, who, even though he's like, I died once and I'm living this new life, ultimately
He
has to go back.
So I mean, now we're getting to the last arc, guys.
Obviously,
please have had so 20 years to watch this. Please finish the end. But once they get into the final bit of the Hard Luck Woman, they show Faye kind of going away, but she does come back, and they show Ed and Ayn leaving. That is the saddest scene because
it is. It was interesting because we had brought up on the first episode that we were talking about Cowboy Bebop the idea of, does the Ayn being a data dog thing come back?
It doesn't.
It does.
It sort of does.
Like they don't make it clear, but like I think in the episode with the
brain scratch one, the cult episode, the one that was like Heaven's Gate, digitized
that
yourself.
One was super creepy.
Yes. Oh my God.
I think Ayn was definitely programming and like controlling the.
That's what I thought
he was
too.
Hacking it because Spike was like, you're doing great, Ed, and Edward's like, what are you talking about? And you look at Ayn, Ayn's like,
yes.
Because he's a data dog.
Yeah, he's basically a supercomputer in dog form.
Yeah. And he totally spoke to that tortoise.
Yep.
Aang's the genius of the crew.
I know, so. But you don't really find out. He's just hiding his cute talents.
Yeah, and that's why Aang wants to go with Ed. When Ed, a.k.a. Francoise,
goes to oh my God, Francoise.
Live with her dad?
I think she was going to go get her dad.
Adopted dad.
Yeah,
I think so.
It's complicated. I think the little scene where she's like, no, go away. You can't come with me. It was very, you know.
Oh, no.
And then she's like, oh, never mind. That's fine. That's fine. You can go with me. It's like, good.
I just really do think that Ed is one of the cutest anime characters of all time.
God, that's this show, great. Like, I, there's so much we still are missing.
Absolutely.
I'd say things that I want to see is what happens to Ed.
Yeah.
Her growing up with the dog, maybe getting some puppies in there. Come on, I'd watch that show.
Yeah.
And then also, like, the 5 years we missed between Faye waking up and then her becoming a badass. Like, how did that happen?
I know.
How did she get so good at everything?
Like,
They don't show it. And they don't, like, how did she get around? So,
I mean, they show a little bit of it with her in the story arc that she has with the Hamish guy. Wasn't that his name? I know he had like 8 names.
Yeah. Right.
And one of them was sort of Scottish sounding. That's what I remember.
It's so abbreviated. I'd love to see, I guess, more of that. And then, because we can't see anything else about the other character, about Spike for sure, because the last arc, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, he kind of wraps up everything about Spike, you know. Yeah. But, you know, and I want to actually ask you guys, wouldn't that scene with Julia where she's, for spoilers, if you haven't seen it, when she passes and she says, you come back and you say, like, this was all just a dream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you guys, what do you guys think that necessarily means?
I don't know. It's complicated because, I mean, we find out about Julia that in the original, in the past that we've seen bits and pieces of, when, you know, Julia was originally involved with Vicious and then she got involved with Spike and she and Spike were going to run away together. They weren't really going to run away together. She was supposed to show up and kill him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
I think this is definitely not a Westworld-esque. There are different realities happening.
No.
Sure, let's not even go there, guys. It's not the year for that. I think it was more about the dream was that they thought they were going to, it was like leading, they were never going to be able to leave together. They both knew.
Okay.
It was going to end at some point. And
that also makes sense because it harkens back to something Julia says right before Spike when they go into the final confrontation with Vicious and they're running away in that hallway and getting shot at. And, you know, she says to him, I'll be with you until the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like she knows that it's going to end.
You know, part of me also thinks that like, you know, and I did some research and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, this totally checks out. Is that Spike's story is actually the story of like the Bushido Samurai, and that the dream is reality, and then he won't be awakened until death. So like that's what it referred to, and that's why there's a bunch of hints towards it. Like, you know, one of the first episodes, Honky Tonk Woman, like you'll see Spike in front of like that's TV with like he was just a samurai, but a samurai named, and then it shows Spike, and then like fucking with the Andy episode,
that's what I was literally gonna say. Turns into a samurai.
So I thought that was a really interesting take on it.
So basically what you're saying is that Cowboy Funk, the Andy episode, is just that is
a short version of Spike.
That is a short version of Spike's entire character arc.
Because he even runs in like he doesn't really have a fear of like losing his life and stuff like that. I think it might part of it be he thinks, you know, like that he'll be awakened or something.
Yeah, and definitely in cinematic history, there are a lot of parallels to the samurai and to the cowboy. It's why there are speaking lessons. It's why it exists.
100%.
So, you know, the themes are always a lone warrior with a burdened past who must fight for justice, even though his heart is in some secret story you'll find out later. And then he always dies. There's always a dramatic death ending.
Yeah.
So I'm like, that's like, I thought that was really... It checks out to me. I think it's really cool to think
about when you're watching it. The shaman they go to once in a while.
He
really points it out. He's like, the star goes in this... Like, what is it? He's like,
there's a red star rising and the blue star to the west or whatever.
He really spells it out. He's like, okay, someone's going to die, y'all.
Yeah, to Jet.
By the way, they're stars. Yeah. Get it? Okay.
when Jet shows up and asks him to help him locate Spike.
He shows up in a couple episodes before that, though.
He's a recurring
And they don't like... The first time he shows up, I'm like, what the fuck is this? And then they just kind of cut away from it and they come back four episodes later.
And then he frames the Jupiter Jazz two-parter.
Yes. He does. So. He's like literally opens and closes it out. So.
Yeah. It's such a good show.
It is. No, it's a really, really great series. I'd forgotten that Faye is sort of the catalyst in helping Spike find Julia because she and Julia find one another first.
Yeah.
Right. she mentions it before she mentions that Spike was just going to stay in space.
Yeah.
Was that? Yeah, he was just going to, I think, stay out there. And then once he finds it out, yeah. Jet's like, you better go get your lady. And I know. He's like, why did you say that to him? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of.
And that whole idea, you know, that Spike brings up, I mean, the phrase that he uses when he decides that he is going to go after Julia is, you know, it's time for me to go get back what I lost or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And but then, but part of me is like, is he just talking about her? Because I feel like there's more to it.
I think so too.
Than that. Because I mean the whole,
he goes and fights Vicious at the end. Like, yes. He even goes back to the Bebop and he has that moment after Julia dies where, like, you know, I only see the past in one eye and then, like, in the other I see the present. And, like, you know, it's all clear now and stuff and I'm ready to, like, end it or something like that.
Yeah. It's pretty... Like, it fits the theming, and it is a beautiful story. But obviously, like, as a human being with rational feelings, you're like, or you could just not done that. It's cool. You could have, like, could have, like, went out, got reinforcements, come back, and, like, killed him with, like, a, I don't know, mail bomb or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a good story, and I think when it ended, so when it first aired, like, a million years ago, 20 years ago, and we saw the ending, everyone's just so, like, there's no way he's dead. That's not how that works.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, in Japan at the time, afterwards, they did air, like, a special episode that was just a recap episode. They called it the Mishmash Blues. Mm-hmm. And it was literally just a clip show.
Yeah. Yeah.
With narration over it.
Kind of just, like, keep something else going. But, I mean, the show's great. And I would be scared of a reboot.
I don't want a reboot
because it holds up fine.
It holds up perfectly. Mm-hmm. I think it's still some of the most stylized in terms of editing and stuff choices I've seen in animation, so I think it's timeless.
Yeah, I would, but again, I would like to see like the side stories told.
Oh, 100%. No, sure. I would love an Ed OVA or a Faye OVA.
I would say
or
Spike story's done.
See, Spike story, I'm good. Done. I don't really need to see any more of it. I wouldn't be that interested in an OVA that really showed the events with him and Vicious and Julia and the Syndicate.
Same.
I think we know enough.
Yeah, they show, I guess, with their story, and I'm good.
Yeah, same. Yeah. There's so much, and I don't know, like, to me, I always felt like Spike was, for lack of a better term, the least interesting of all the other characters' backstories, which, not saying it's not interesting, I thought
no,
it was great,
not at all.
But it's because I think they do, show you everything.
Yeah,
I want to know
you
more about these guys.
I mean, you do. You bring up the point of the sort of arc of the samurai story, and I think that in that final confrontation between Spike and Vicious, that's what we get. It's not a big, crazy fight.
Yeah.
It was one of the things I sort of draw a parallel between that and the final confrontation between Star Wars Rebels, spoilers if you haven't seen it, Obi-Wan and Darth Maul, that people wanted. And with Cowboy Bebop, it was not that they wanted this, but, you know, with Rebels, they wanted this, like, big, crazy lightsaber duel. And it wasn't. It was a samurai fight. And, like, friggin' Obi-Wan just kills Darth Maul with one stroke. And that was the final confrontation here where, you know, they kick their weapons back to each other and just boom, done.
Yeah. Also, like, sword versus gun. Hello. Okay. When the fight first starts, you're like, you just shoot him, though. I don't understand.
But he was trying to shoot him. And
I think once they got to close combat, then it's like, a close combat weapon versus a long range weapon. That's their disadvantage.
But
I thought it was just very funny to see them, like, you know, him holding the knife with the katana with the gun. I just laughed. I'm like, guys, this is not how that's. But it is cool as fuck. Though.
Anime. So they can do what they want. So, Cowboy Bebop, great show. It was really nice to revisit it. It had been a long time since I watched it, and it still totally holds up.
Just nostalgia. It is very
good.
No,
it's not. Oh, it's very, very good. Man, I want to get one of those 20th anniversary.
I know.
I can't afford it.
No, they're really expensive.
We got a new Patreon goal, everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
We can share one,
money,
right?
And we can get the most expensive, the $500 Cowboy Bebop Blu-ray set, assuming enough people buy that it gets made. So go buy those, guys, because they're going to be so freaking cool.
They look
cool.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's our nostalgia trip for Cowboy Bebop. It was good. I think we
totally holds up.
A lot of episodes on it. I'm very glad we did because we got to cover every single everything.
And this, like, it shows so many sides of, like, the spectrum. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many different characters and, like, just issues that people have as people. Yep. And I think it's so rare to find in one series.
Yeah, like, it's great storytelling. It shows not just heartfelt stories, but comedy stories.
Yeah.
And then there's also an overarching theme. And then there's lots and lots of different, lots of story. It's a very good practice in storytelling. You guys should do a thesis on it.
But
I did when I was in college.
But now it is time for us to move on to our next assignment, Anime Club. And I'm very excited about this. I personally suggested it and everybody was very excited and on board with it. So next week, we are going to be covering the first Tenchi OVA, which is Tenchi Muyo episodes 1-7. Mm-hmm. If you guys have a Funimation subscription, it is on there. What you want to click on is the one that says Tenchi Muyo OVA.
Yes.
Not Tenchi Muyo Ryooki, not
Tenchi Muyo In Love or
not
Galaxy.
Tenchi Universe. Yeah. Like none of that. Just Tenchi Muyo OVA.
The OG one.
The OG one.
OG OVA. Yep.
And we're covering episodes 1-7, which is the first OVA. And then, of course, the next week we'll cover the second half, which ends on episode 13. So 8 through 13.
It is kind of like a harem.
It sure is.
It is like the original harem.
It's actually
harem
kind of the OG harem anime.
What was that? And then Love Hina came around the same time, the manga anyway. But anyway, it's a great, it's amazing. It's one of the first anime that I started actively collecting on VHS.
Nice.
From Suncoast Video.
I love it.
And I have watched all iterations of it. All of them. There's so many. I watched all the Pretty Sammy ones too, guys.
Yeah.
Nice.
So yeah, guys, if you have never watched Tenchi Muyo, now is your chance.
It is your time.
Get on it. Episodes 1-7. That is what we are going to be covering here next week on Anime Club. Don't forget to check out our My Hero Academia Hero Challenge. We post that every Wednesday. We've been getting such lovely, fun responses
it's
to that.
Super positive.
It's really just a little bright spot on a sometimes dark internet.
Yeah.
Anything else that you guys would like to share with the audience before we wrap things up here?
No, I think you covered it.
Awesome. Great.
Yay.
Well, then without further ado, everybody, this session of the Hyper Otaku Anime Club is adjourned.
See you, Space Cowboy.
If you watch a lot of anime, or even just a little anime, particularly of the more comedic variety, you've probably noticed that sometimes characters who are otherwise drawn realistically proportioned, at least as realistically as anime gets, occasionally, well, aren't. Often out of nowhere, characters turn into what appear to be round-faced, chubby toddlers. Considered both cute and comedic, the use of super deformed or SD characters signifies a change in behavior, usually involving someone acting overly cute and sweet in order to get their way, or acting immature, hence the whole resembling a child thing. Relatedly, this will occur when a character is experiencing extreme emotion, like lusting over a plate of delicious food or having a meltdown over a bad grade on a test. While its origins are not entirely clear, this use of adorable, tiny characters is a regular part of Japanese culture, used not only in anime and manga, but also advertising, subway signage, food labels, you name it.